Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Trevor in 30 minutes, and we will ask Trevor about, hey, if Drake May slides, would you take him? Or would you keep Levis and take somebody else? We'll see what Trevor has to say. And then Barry Trotz will join us in less than an hour. We'll get his thoughts on, you know, the schedule, the playoffs, everything else. But I keep thinking about the discussion I had with Brian Callahan the day after he was hired, in which I asked him the question about Ja'Marr Chase, Penei Sewell, and that's where the whole elite touchdown scorer, elite non-touchdown scorer, where that whole thing came about. And it's like, okay, if the Titans find themselves in a similar situation, if Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brock Bowers versus Joe Alt's there, what are you going to do? What do you want to do? And again, he's not going to tell us what he wants to do now, so we have to take about what he said in the past, and we have to analyze that and decide, okay, is this going to be a similar situation? So Brian Callahan did say on this show exactly why he, in the debate they had in Cincinnati, was pro Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell.
In that debate, the Sewell-Chase debate, which was, again, two players that you knew, whichever one we take is probably going to be a 10-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro style player. Mm-hmm. And Penei was fantastic, and we loved him. And Ja'Marr was fantastic, and we loved him. And the debate went back and forth and back and forth, and which one do we need? And I just I landed on the Ja'Marr Chase side because I saw what he could do for our offense. The difference there to me is, like, Ja'Marr was an elite player. And in that moment for our team in Cincinnati, the elite player that can score touchdowns versus the elite player that can protect the quarterback with the style of quarterback that we had and the style of offense that we ran, we took the guy that could score touchdowns.
Okay. Say, hey, you know, that was in that moment the reason why. Can I ask whether or not that was actually the right decision? I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is a great player, but so is Penei Sewell. Penei Sewell might actually be the best offensive lineman in the NFL. And then you have to wonder, okay, what's happened to the teams since those decisions were made? Cincinnati drafted Ja'Marr Chase, they went to the Super Bowl, and they've been a contender ever since. But the thing that's held Cincinnati back is undoubtedly their offensive line. They've spent so much money in free agency, whether it's Alex Kappa, Ted Karras, Orlando Brown Jr., Lyle Collins, they've spent a lot of money. And it might be the one thing that's holding them back from the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, Detroit, in that same draft, after taking Penei Sewell, was able to draft Amon-Ra St. Brown. And Amon-Ra St. Brown is a legitimate number one receiver. There's no doubt, if we compare the two sides, Cincinnati, Ja'Marr Chase, and their tackle in the second round, Jackson Carman, who has played in 22 career games with 6 starts at guard, Detroit actually comes out ahead, right? And so then I thought to myself, okay, well, that's easy to say. Well, you know, they got the receiver in round 4, and, you know, look, that's it. That would almost be cherry picking, right? When Detroit took Penei Sewell, they didn't know they were going to get Amon-Ra St. Brown, and they didn't know Amon-Ra St. Brown was going to be Amon-Ra St. Brown. But then I look at the draft and say, okay, what was the depth of that draft? Because we talk about this all the time. You know, well, if you take the guy here and then you can take the other guy later, and, you know, this is a deep tackle draft and this is a... So I looked up the 2021 draft. In that, the second round, the first round had Rashawn Slater, a Pro Bowler, Penei Sewell, a Pro Bowler, and Christian Darrisaw, a first round tackle who has been very good. Now, there was Alex Leatherwood, that John Gruden pick that ended up being a guard, but I guess he was a tackle at Alabama or was supposed to be a tackle in the NFL, and he was a bust. But 3 first round tackles there, 3 starters, or 4 first round tackles, 3 starters. After that, there were 3 second round tackles that were taken. five if you count two guys, Tevin Jenkins and Liam Eichenberg, who have been converted to guard under the second coaching staffs. And again, guard is different than tackle. Tackle, premium position. So Cincinnati goes Ja'Marr Chase in round one. And in the same draft, the second round tackles were Jackson Carman, again, six starts over 3 years, all of those at guard. Walker Little has made 17 starts over 3 years at Jacksonville. And Dylan Radins has made 16 starts in 3 years. So after those first round tackles, there was nobody in that 2021 class. The receivers that were after round one in the 21 class include Nico Collins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rondale Moore, Josh Palmer, and Terrence Marshall Jr., all of whom have one season listed as an NFL starter. Which takes me back to the original question. Was that the right opinion? It's hard to argue with Cincinnati's results, saying, okay, since they made that choice, they've been to one Super Bowl, two AFC championship games, and last year Joe Burrow got hurt, and it wasn't really a protection injury as much as it was just a freak injury, the wrist hit the turf, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, I can argue the one thing that has held Cincinnati back is their offensive line. If they had drafted Sewell with Joe Burrow, a force multiplier at quarterback, with T. Higgins already at wide receiver, could they not have drafted a Nico Collins, drafted an Amon-Ra St. Brown, drafted a Josh Palmer, and put that guy with Higgins and Boyd and Burrow and still have been successful with Penei Sewell at right tackle or left tackle and thus protecting Joe Burrow? And I don't know the answer to the question here. Because if normally when guys get jobs, they do what they did at their past job. Nobody wants to be this guy, but we all know this guy. Somebody gets hired into their organization, and he sits there, and he goes, well, when I was at Cincinnati, what we did. And I don't know if Brian Callahan's that guy or not. But for as much as we've made about, hey, elite touchdown score, Malik Nabers, elite touchdown score. Brock Bowers, elite touchdown score. As much as we've made about that, I think there's a very strong argument to be made that Cincinnati made the wrong decision. And it's hard to say that when they've gone out and had success and gone to the Super Bowl and Ja'Marr Chase is awesome. But that was a much deeper receiver draft than it was a tackle draft. And the fact that they had offensive line problems, go back to that last play of the Super Bowl, Ja'Marr Chase is wide open, and it doesn't matter because Aaron Donald is eating Joe Burrow for lunch. So just keep that in mind when we have that elite touchdown score versus elite non-touchdown score. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025, and we will get to some of your phones. Plus, I did a little homework assignment about if you don't take Joe Alt in the first round. We'll get to that coming up next here on our program. So about Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I love Hiller. That's right. Smile and save this month with Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Because from now until April 30th, you can take advantage of big savings on home systems. Enjoy up to $1,500 off select new HVAC systems, whole home water filtration and descalers, or select new whole home generators. And if you've been waiting for the right time to upgrade or replace your systems, now's the time to do it. Visit happyhiller.com today for all the details. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. They've been taking great care of my home for years. They can do the same for you. That's Hiller, proud supporters of the Preds, the Vols, and Vandy. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
This is a crapshoot at best. I've said from 20 years ago, the best of us bat about 550 in the draft. You know, the guys that are in the Hall of Fame bat about 550 in the draft over time.
Wow.
And so there are no sure shots. None. Even none. Peyton Manning was not a sure shot. You know, there aren't that many. And certainly guys that are going to change a team or be game changers or all of the adjectives that are used to describe these guys are just nonsense. We don't know if they can play. We'll find out 3 years from now.
There you go. That was Bill Polian on SiriusXM NFL Radio. So we're talking again about, hey, you know, the elite touchdown scorer, the elite non-touchdown scorer. Maybe Cincinnati didn't make the right call because Jackson Carmen, their second-round pick as a tackle, was a bust. But I went back and did a homework assignment today of the three drafts, 2020, 2021, 2022. How many tackles were selected that have become starters in the first round, and how many have become starters that were picked in later rounds? I felt, Ian, like the 2023 draft was too early to tell.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
So I went 2020, 2021, 2022, and it all happens to fit into the new this current collective bargaining agreement.
Cool.
Because rules change, things like that. So in 2020, there were five tackles taken in the first round. Four of them had at least one season as a starter. Isaiah Wilson was the one who did not. He was a bust. Andrew Thomas, the Giants. Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton, and Tristan Wirfs. And by the way, Tristan Wirfs has been to three Pro Bowls. So four tackles were taken in 2020 that became starters in the first round. One starter outside of the first round. San Francisco took Colton McKivitz in the fifth round at 153, and he was a starter for 1 year last year. Before that, it was Mike McGlinchey, who was taken eighth overall, but McGlinchey left as a free agent, and Colton McKivitz, in his fourth year in the league, became the starter at right tackle. So there's one for one season. 2021, three starting tackles, Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell, Christian Darrisaw, all taken in the first round. 2022, now this is where it gets fascinating. 2022 saw Ikem Ekwonu, Evan Neal, Charles Cross, and Trevor Penning all drafted in the first round, all currently are listed as starters for their teams. The reason I say currently is because Ekwonu might be a bust, Neal might be a bust, and Penning might be a bust. Charles Cross is legit. But as of right now, they're starters, and they've all started in the NFL. However, in 2022, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer started one season, 2022. He was taken in the third round at 69. Braxton Jones was drafted 168 in the fifth round. He has been a two-year starter as the left tackle of the Chicago Bears. So that is a real legitimate starter right there. Jamal Slayer was a sixth-round pick at 195 to the Chargers. He played left tackle in 2022. I guess Slater got hurt. He played left tackle in 2022 and kicked inside to left guard in 2023. But if you can play left tackle for an entire season and then they keep you around to start, that's good enough for me. He counts as a starter. Bernard Raymond has started two seasons in Indianapolis. He was taken in the third round at 77 overall. And Zach Tom, and he might be the best of this group. Zach Tom was taken in the fourth round at 140. He was a backup his rookie year, but he was the right tackle of the Green Bay Packers in 2023. So in 2022, four first-round tackles that have been starters, but they may not be very good, and then five guys who have started at least a little bit that weren't taken in the first round. But again, the guys we're talking about here, the only guy that we know on this list that we're talking about, and we're like, yeah, he's a starter, is Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, a.k.a.
PT.
And he sucks. So keep that in mind. So the math says, if you decide not to take Joe Alt, you decide that you want to go tackle in the second round, over those three drafts, you've got a 35% chance of that guy being a starter compared to 11 of the starters coming in the first round. 11 starters in the first round, 6 starters outside of the first round over those 3 years, 3 Pro Bowlers, Wirfs, Slater, and Sewell, all taken in the first round. So keep that in mind. And I know you guys think Bill Callahan is a wizard. Remember, Jedrick Wills, first-round pick, they didn't wait until the 8th round. The right tackle there, Jack Conklin, they didn't wait. That was a day one free agent signing for a boatload of money. So if you really want a starting tackle, now you could sign Andrus Peat, But if you really want a starting tackle, you probably have to take him in the first round. That being said, I'm sure people are going to say, well, you said take Drake May. Right. Quarterback is different. If I can get an elite quarterback, and this guy's an elite prospect at quarterback, I'm going to do it. But, again, as easy as it is to say, well, you know, Malik Nabers is an elite touchdown scorer. Brock Bowers is an elite touchdown scorer. At the same time, Detroit got their elite tackle, and then they found Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth round. None of these guys, I'm sorry, Zach, Tom, Braxton Jones, PT, none of these guys are the Amon-Ra St. Brown at tackle. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. One texter says, you have to think about the body and brain damage that Joe Burrow has taken from no protection. I actually think Joe Burrow will be okay, but I hear what you're saying. That would worry me. Another texter says there's no way Levis could take the beating that Joe Burrow has taken because of that offensive line. And I tend to agree with that. Like, I don't know if Will Levis is injury prone, because Will Levis had terrible protection his last year at Kentucky and got injured, and had terrible protection last year and got injured. But the reality is he's been a starter for 3 years of his life, and in two of them, he's gotten injured. That is a concern. And, again, it's chicken or the egg here, right? Like, is Levis actually injury prone, or is Levis injury prone because he's had no lines from what's in front of him? Keith in Bowling Green says, Keith in Bowling Green says, games are won in the trenches. Tell that to your coach. Because, again, your coach said, in this particular case of Chase and Sewell, we decided to go Chase for the elite touchdown score because Jamar Chase can make things happen. And so you don't need to tell that to me. You got to tell that to your coach. Because your coach argued against it in Cincinnati. One texter says, Zach Tom was taken in the fourth round. Yes, Chuck, that was mentioned here in the breakdown of guys that were drafted. In fact, I think of all these guys, Zach Tom might be the only real starter. Like, Colton McKivitt started last year, but that was out of necessity. This was the same team that started Daniel Brunskill, I believe, at tackle at one point. Like, I think that, again, you're running a risk if you think you can wait to the second round, the third round. This is why I keep telling people when it comes to the, oh, yeah, trade back, take Amarius Mims, you know, all this. But guys, if you are a left tackle, and this is, again, why I'm pumping Alt up here, but, like, if you are a left tackle that can play in the NFL the day that you leave college, you are taken by the 14th pick. You are not lasting until the middle of the first round because those guys are so rare. I mean, that's just... Dustin from Hopkinsville, Kentucky says, never strap yourself to picking because of need. Cincinnati needed linemen. They picked a wide receiver, went to the Super Bowl. The talent overcame the need. Levis having people to throw to that can get open quick, catch well, get the ball out of his hands faster, that would allow you to find out who he really is this year, and you can't get much better at blindside without using the 7th pick, though it doesn't have to be Alt. The franchises that play it safe rarely see the promised land. Well, again, Detroit was the team that ended up with Penei Sewell, and I'd say Detroit is pretty freaking good if their coach could just pull his head out of his ass for 5 minutes, which I don't think he'll ever do. All right, Trevor joins us next. We got the Brock Bowers stuff to get into with Trevor from yesterday, Mark Dominic. We've got the Drake May stuff, the scenarios. What does Trevor think? Because, again, Tim Hasselbeck says if Drake May falls, you take him. And I agree with Hasselbeck, and you all, yeah, you're an idiot. Let's see what Trevor says. And we'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, the game. And join the Nashville Super Speedway in the city of Lebanon for Speedway on the Square this Saturday, April 20th from 1 to 6 in downtown Lebanon. Stop by and bring the family for a day filled with inflatables, face painting, balloon art, live music, and a ticket giveaway to the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at 3:30 p.m. Also, tune in to 1025-1063 The Game today as Vandy Baseball takes on Lipscomb. Pregame at 5:45, first pitch at 6. Vandy Baseball is brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com.
If Drake May's stock does slip and he falls to 7 to the Tennessee Titans, should the Titans take him?
100%. 100%. I'm telling you what, if his stock is slipping at the combine,
I'd like to know what for. Size, athleticism, arm strength, and then the interview process. You guys, you know, I've had, you know, I called his first start, and I've called his, I guess it would have been his last game, his against NC State this past season because he didn't play in the bowl game. Like, I had him a number of times, had him in production meetings a number of times. He's going to be super impressive in the interview process. Like, so to me, when I hear, like, hey, his stock is dropping, I like, that feels like it has to be smokescreen to me. It has to be. Because, like, I've sat there and, like, I've experienced what the interview process would seem like with him. And I don't think that there are going to be teams that walk away from interacting with him and think, that guy can't be a franchise quarterback. I don't think that – I mean, I just – that would be the most unlikely scenario that I could imagine.
Okay, that was Tim Hasselbeck on with the Midday Show. And you heard Caroline say, if he falls to seven and Hasselbeck just immediately goes, take him. Take him. This is where we go over the scenario so that on draft night, just like the team – whenever something happens, we're not shocked by it, and we're prepared. Okay, what do you do here? Trevor Maddich joins us on the program. I, for one, agree with Tim Hasselbeck that if Drake May falls to seven, and there's some chatter that, you know, New England likes J.J. McCarthy, and then the two teams, the Chargers and Arizona, won't want to trade because they'll want Marvin and Malik Nabers. And somehow, if he's there at seven, Trevor, I would take Drake May and turn around and trade Will Levis, knowing that I won't get, you know, the full value probably for Levis. I would do it for the younger prospect, 21 years old. I think he's a better prospect and a better player than Levis. I would do it 5 years as compared to the 3 years left on Levis's rookie deal. Trevor, what would you do?
I would not take him. I would still take Joe Alt if it's between those two. Now, I have tremendous respect for Tim Hasselbeck. I mean, he played the position in college and in the NFL. He's one of the best analysts out there for college and NFL football. I've got great respect for him. And I've got to say that I just see this differently. And the reason I see it differently is twofold. One is that I don't see Drake May as a lock to make it. I think he's got great upside, but when you look at quarterbacks in the draft, you are about a 50-50 crapshoot, essentially, for whether or not they're going to be great, even when they're taken high in the first round. I mean, let's just go back to 2021, just a couple of years ago. Five quarterbacks taken in the first round. So Trevor Lawrence was one of them. What do you think of Trevor Lawrence right now, having seen him for several years in the league, Jared?
Oh, he's fine.
He's fine. But he's the number one pick in the draft. Number two pick was quarterback Zach Wilson.
Sure, all the other guys sucked.
BYU. Right, Trey Lance is no longer with the 49ers. They moved up to get him, and then shipped him off to the Cowboys. They gave up on him. Justin Fields for the Bears is still a work in progress, and the jury is still out. Mac Jones went in the first round, 15th pick to the Patriots, and the Patriots gave up on him. So really, only two of those five are even with this team that drafted them. So what I'm saying is that every one of them was super excited that they drafted their quarterback of the future. And already from the 2021 draft, the first season was 2022, 2 years ago, three of them aren't even with their team anymore because they gave up on them. Kenny Pickett was 2 years ago, I think, Pittsburgh. He's not with his team, first-round quarterback. They were excited that he would be the quarterback of the future for the Steelers. Well, they gave up on him and shipped him out. So what I'm saying is it's about a 50-50 chance that you're going to have your quarterback of the future. So that's one reason that I am a little careful about, you know, giving up too much to go up high and draft a quarterback. He might be Patrick Mahomes, but then again, he might be Mac Jones.
So nothing that you've said, though, like everything that you've said is just generically about quarterbacks. Nothing you've said is about
May. Right, but let me get specific, though. Yeah, but let me get specific now, okay? Now, once again, Tim Hasselbeck and others that I have heard put Drake May in the top tier. Great. I totally agree. But there's a couple things that give me pause as to whether or not he's got a better chance than average of being in that 50% that is your franchise quarterback for the next 10 years. when you looked at him this last year, and really the year before too, but especially in 2023 at North Carolina, he made some amazing throws. But he also made a lot of head scratchers. I mean, on crossing routes, he would slow down receivers that were running wide open across the field. They had to slow down or even stop to catch the ball. And instead of getting lots of yards after the catch, that allowed defenders to catch up to him and take him down right there. You know, he had issues with accuracy relative to that. And that's kind of a head scratcher, because it led to a lot of interceptions, not where, you know, he was trying to make something happen because his receivers weren't as good this last year as they were the year before. But it's just like, okay, that was pretty much a lousy throw. Against pressure, he seemed to be degraded, at least as I watched him, more than I thought he should have been, given his natural talent. You know, he tackled a lot of his receivers. He'd throw the ball, especially on intermediate routes, into the ground, and a receiver that could catch it and run instead went to the ground trying to catch the ball. I mean, he got a completion and a tackle on the same play. And so I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. He's an outstanding quarterback with great potential. But I don't see him as a lock. And because of that, if Joe Alt is there, you've got a much better chance of having a guy like Alt at that position be your pillar for 10 years than you would in taking a quarterback like Drake May that might be a great franchise guy and might be a bust, just like those three guys of the five first-rounders in the 2021 draft.
Okay, so just quickly, though, let's say Caleb Williams falls to 7. Would you take Caleb Williams?
I think Caleb Williams is a better risk. I would be likely to take Caleb Williams. His upside is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's why he's the number one quarterback, because he does stuff that very few people can do that Patrick Mahomes does in his sleep. If Williams was down there, I think I'd take that risk with him.
Okay. I was wondering if it was just your anti-first-round quarterback bias or if it was specific to this. But then here's my next question. Trevor Maddich is with us. By the way, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook and Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. If you had to bet your career, because that's what these GMs are doing, if you had to bet your career just straight up on Drake May or Will Levis, who would you put it on?
Straight up, I would probably roll the dice with Drake May. But Levis has something that May doesn't, and that is he has a rookie season in the NFL playing behind an offensive line that was historically awful. I mean, last year's Titans offensive line as a group should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as one of the worst that's ever played as a group. It was just terrible. And he didn't have a very good receiving core. And yet I thought that he, Levis, showed a lot of courage, moxie. He showed the ability to learn from a mistake and not make that mistake over and over and over again. He kept looking downfield when the pocket was collapsing around him. Now, I'm not talking about blitzes and stuff. I'm just talking about a four-man rush. And he showed a lot of things that I thought were good that Drake May hasn't had a chance to show yet because he hasn't played in the NFL yet. So having said that, if I am that GM, Jared, I'm looking at the math like this. I don't see it as Drake May or Will Levis. I see it as Drake May and whatever I could get by trading Levis, or, say, Joe Alt and Levis. So to me, it's a package deal with the other stuff that you would be giving up. And I would rather go right now based on what I know, which, by the way, Tim Hasselbeck disagrees with me. And he is a much better quarterback guru than I can ever be. This is just what I see. I would much rather go with Joel and Levis right now than I would with Drake May and whoever I could get from a trade of Levis.
So Rick Spielman, the former Vikings general manager, is on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and he's got a podcast with CBS, and he put out his tiers. And in tier one, he does have Drake May, along with Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Jaden Daniels, and has Joe Alt in tier two behind Rome Odunze and Brock Bowers. I do wonder what you make of that, of, again, a former GM like Rick Spielman saying, okay, May is a first-level talent, a tier one talent, and Alt's not, because Trevor, I was under the impression that Ault was as good of a talent as you could be coming out in the draft.
I think he's as good of a prospect as you could be coming out in the draft, and that's a little bit different. Ault is so smooth, his technique is so advanced for a college left tackle that he projects to step in as a starter and not have the huge learning curve to the degree that a lot of others would have. Olufashinu, who I really like, the left tackle out of Penn State, has a lot to learn because his technique is kind of awful. At the right side, J.C. Latham out of Alabama, who some people have rated even higher than Joe Ault, he has a whole lot to improve in his technique, especially in pass protection. Joe Ault doesn't have a whole lot to improve. He's fine-tuning. So the prospect as opposed to the talent, I think, can be two different things. And when you look at, you know, what Spielman said about Drake May being in the top tier, once again, he's a general manager. I have never been a general manager. So you've got to take what I say and how I back it up and then apply your own research to it. As listeners, this is what you should be doing. So I'm not saying Spielman is wrong. I'm saying that I'm not nearly as confident that Drake May is going to hit when he gets to the NFL. Is he a top-level quarterback coming out? You can make that case. You can absolutely make that case. But the floor is what worries me. And what you would be giving up if you abandon Levis, trade him, don't have Joe Ault, and you put the Drake May in there, yeah, he might be great. Might not be great. I don't know. I don't know about Levis either. But I'm very confident that Joe Ault is going to be a solid player for a long time.
Trevor is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics and ESPN Bet Sportsbook. We will get to the Mark Dominic take of Brock Bowers over Joe Ault at 7. We'll do that next. First, I want to tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook, my official sportsbook app. Bet the NBA play-in tournament with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel. If you already have an account, you'll get bonus bets back. If your same-game parlay does not win on any Tuesday night matchup, NBA same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance to score an even bigger payday. However you want, just go to FanDuel.com/JGM to bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay. That's FanDuel.com/JGM and make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA and my official sportsbook app. 21 and over and present in Tennessee. Minimum three-leg parlay required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max refund $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions do apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
If Brock is there, I think that's too easy of a pick. If not, it feels like it's an offensive tackle. Could they take another pass rusher type of guy? Sure. But my gut instinct is that they want to make sure they secure the offensive line. They did what you said, right? You get a pass-catching running back on Tony Pollard. You got Tyjae Spears, who obviously can catch the ball well at the backfield. Those two will hopefully complement each other and work really well. But then they also said, hey, look, we're going to solidify our wide receiver room with Treylon Burks, but Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins. We've got three guys, three horses, so we don't have to take a wide receiver, you know, in the first round. We feel really good. So it goes back down to me. It's the three choices. It's if the tight end's there, I think it's a Stockton to Malone. I think it's a slam dunk. But if the tight end's not there, I think it's offensive tackle. And then if for whatever reason they like only one of them and that player's off the board, I think that they might be the first team to take the defensive, take Dallas Turner.
Okay, that was Mark Dominic on SiriusXM NFL Radio. Trevor Maddich with us, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook and Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Dominic says it's a slam dunk if Brock Bowers is there at 7 to take him. I even texted Dominic, Trevor, and I said, you take him over Joe Ault. He said he would. Your thoughts?
Well, I... with this team right now, I would, unless they have Bowers graded significantly higher than Ault, and maybe they do. The thing about Bowers is that he is a matchup nightmare for defenses, and he is very advanced in everything there is for a tight end to be advanced. In other words, some of the top receivers coming out, they do one thing really well. Usually it's speed, but other things they're not so great. Usually that's route precision. But Bowers can do all those things at Georgia over the last 2 years. He played banged up, especially this past season, with a wide receiver core around him that wasn't great, in part because of injuries in the wide receiver core, which meant that opposing defenses were focused on him first, and yet they could not stop him. And so he's the kind of a guy that with especially good receivers around him, so the defense can't just focus on him only, he'll be a force multiplier for a lot of reasons. I mean, he can line up as an inline tight end. You can put him out at wide receiver. You can put him in the backfield. There's lots of things. You can hand the ball to him. You can line him up at running back, and he'd be very effective. So these are all things that are great about him. It's just that with this team, if they have if they've got the grades relatively similar between Bowers and Ault, and if they're both available, I'm going with Ault because this team has been for several years now in offensive line wasteland, and they have got to get that squared away or their receivers aren't going to help much.
Is there any player in this draft that you would take at seven over Joe Ault if, like, you know, for instance, Marvin Harrison, Malik Davis? Is there any player for the Titans specifically that you would take over Joe Ault?
I would take Caleb Williams. I would consider Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze and Marvin Harrison, the three, what I consider to be the three top receivers. I would consider them. But again, if the grades are similar, then no. And again, when I say the grades, this really comes down to what the Titans have on their board. Mm-hmm. If they've got Marvin Harrison, let's say, receiver out of Ohio State, Marvin Harrison Jr., if they've got him significantly higher graded than Ault, and he falls down to seven for whatever reason, let's say J.J. McCarthy, quarterback out of Michigan, somebody snatches him up in the top seven, and that pushes Harrison down, then you've really got to make that consideration. But see, I think with Brian Callahan as the head coach for the Titans, he had this issue with the Bengals when he was there, when they could have taken Ja'Marr Chase, great receiver, or Penei Sewell, great offensive lineman, left tackle. And they ended up going with Ja'Marr Chase, the great playmaker, the touchdown scorer. And you can't say that he was wrong, because Chase has become one of the best, most dynamic weapons in the NFL. But at the same time, behind a bad offensive line, Joe Burrow, the quarterback for Cincinnati, has had to protect himself by getting the ball out of his hands much more quickly than anybody would want, and still he wasn't protected all that well. You know, the injuries that he's had haven't always been because of the offensive line, but he's been banged up back there because of a bad offensive line. And those great receivers have not been as effective as they could be if Burrow had time in the pocket rather than just having to get the ball out quickly. And so I think having had that experience, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Coach Callahan does if he has the opportunity to go with what is a potentially great offensive tackle or potentially a great receiver. Would he do it again and take the receiver and try to build up that offensive line over time? My guess is that he would go the opposite direction this time around.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Let's say that Joe Ault, you know, I have dismissed the idea of the Chargers taking Joe Ault at five. You have not. Charles Davis has not. A lot of people have not dismissed that idea. Let's say Ault goes off the board at five. I mean, at that point, do the Titans still have to take a tackle in the first round? Because who's at tackle? Or then would you rather have a Bowers and a Dunze, a Nabers, that kind of player, than, say, dropping back and taking Thelis Fuaga or J.C. Latham or one of those kind of guys? Because somebody's got to play tackle, Trevor.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, and I like J.C. Latham as a right tackle for this team. You know, I think that once he gets coached up on his pass sets and things like that, he'll just be a devastating road grader. He'll be a Jack Conklin kind of guy, maybe even a better run blocker. And I think that would be a good risk. At the same time, what they may end up doing if Chargers do take Joe Ault at number five, that's going to push other players down one. Mm-hmm. And that makes trade up opportunities for teams below the Titans much more intriguing, especially if a guy like a Drake May, quarterback out of North Carolina, is one of those people that now gets pushed out. And somebody like Denver or Minnesota that's looking for a quarterback would want to trade up. Now you've got to think about, what you want to do, because trading down at that point is a reasonable consideration. They should be able to get, is with in the second round, high in the second round with that 37th pick, they should be able to get a right or a left tackle that will dramatically upgrade that position for them this year. The question is, will they get a starter or will they get an elite playmaking blocker? And that's what they would get if they get a Joe Alt at number 7. If he's not available, then they've got to make the decision if they want to trade back a little bit and maybe get an offensive lineman later in the first round or even in the second round at that point.
Well, would you do that? I mean, like, let's say, you know, I'm convinced there's 8 elite players in this draft, right? The 3 quarterbacks, the 2 receivers, Neighbors and Harrison, Bowers, Alt, and Dallas Turner. If I trade down, I'm not going to get one of those elite players. And it's like, is it worth the trade back? Like, is it worth the trade back to miss out on one of the elite players to get a tackle?
If Joe Alt is not there,
yes,
then I think it's worth the consideration. It's also worth the consideration at that point to take one of those players that got pushed down because Alt unexpectedly went up at number 5, even if that happens to be one of those receivers now. Again, you come back to where the grading is, and you may have to decide, look, if the guy we think is going to be our rock for 10 years at left tackle isn't there, so we're going to have to take a guy that we're going to know needs more development over time to get to be a solid player, well, then maybe we do take that elite touchdown scorer since we're going to have to develop that left tackle anyhow, right? And so you've got depth at receiver and depth at tackle in this draft that gives you options like that. The reason Alt is being talked about as the guy to be targeted is because his floor is the highest. His ceiling is probably not much higher than some of the other tackles in this draft, but his floor is the highest, meaning that he is the best risk that he will pan out to be a good to outstanding left tackle right out of the gate. Everybody else is going to need some work in order to get to that point. And so this is where if Alt is not there, you've got to decide what kind of risk you want to take and how much development you think you can do to a player that needs that development to get to a point to where he's worthy of the pick.
Trevor Maddux is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters, and by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. Trevor, great stuff. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddux. I mean, we try to pack as much info there as possible. The Predators are headed to the playoffs. When are they going to play? We don't know. Who are they going to play? We think Vancouver, but we don't know. Barry Trotz joins us next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.